Chapter 15. Eleanor, Gorkagrod. We delude ourselves with promises of a better tomorrow. If only, begins the mantra of the week. We must strive without hope of cessation of effort. We must hold ourselves above ambition, seeking to excel, but not to conquer. To build is a fleeting experience, while destruction is eternal. Build not for tomorrow, but for today. Fight not for your future, but for the present. The past becomes meaningless in such consideration, but we cannot break free from its shackles. The universe knows what must happen, but panders to whims that wish otherwise. Recognizing inevitability is not fatalism. How I loathe this waiting. As when two pugilists step back by tacit consent to draw a breath before recommencing their fight, a lull descended upon the Orc city. While the Lord Commander arrayed his broken companies into new formations and Field Legatus Dor drew up his reserves to support the next thrust, the Adeptus Mechanicus scoured the outer city of the remaining pockets of Orcs to secure the line of attack. Laurentius had argued, possibly a little too vehemently, that the destruction of the Brute Shield was still the paramount objective of the Cult Mechanicus, which was how he found himself tasked with leading an expedition to discover how to do just that. Guarded by maniples of cyber constructs and several platoons of Skitarii, watched over by the Knight Paladin, Greyblade, he picked through the remains of an Orc tower close to the original line of the shield. Taking picked captures and data readings, he examined the spread of debris and attempted to divine the purpose of several chambers and broken machines within. "It is an amplifier," he said aloud. He gestured at Jeddaz, a minor tech priest who had been assigned to him as attendant for some unknown dereliction of duty. Laurentius pointed to the drops of metal on the walls, conduits for something.
"Here, look, these were a network. Melted by whatever blast broke the tower. High-intensity melter residue everywhere. A knight's thermal cannon, I would say. And these rooms, they housed battery cells of some sort."
"But there are no conduits or projectors," Jeddaz replied with a sigh.
He turned over flattened pots and broken furniture with his mechadendrites, what remained of his face, curled in a distasteful sneer, as though rifling through effluent.
"Magos, I am detecting an aerial approach on an unexpected vector," Sir Falderon warned from the Greyblade.
"An air raid?"
"A single craft coming out of the inner city."
"Is it heading towards us?"
"Its course will bring it close. Anti-air batteries in the main force are preparing to engage."
Laurentius shunted the data stream from the Knight into his cogitator backups, thinking to add the information to the vast repository on the Orcs he already carried. As he did so, he noticed that the flight path of the aircraft was unlike anything he had recorded from the Greenskins. He tried to quantify what he found. Orcs were headlong, instinctual fighters. Their pilots were mostly crazed speed cultists who valued the thrill of high velocity as much as battle itself. The incoming craft was being circumspect.
"No!"
shouted Laurentius, jamming the Greyblade's communications channel with an override signal. He scrambled out of the bunker and up a pile of gore-strewn ruin, his three mechanical legs making hard work of the incline. He searched the skies and saw the blot that was the incoming aircraft.
"Is it broadcasting any signals? Any identifiers?"
"Why would it..."
The Knight Scion trailed off.
"There is a low-frequency radio transmission, Magos."
"Send it to me."
"It could be..."
"Send it to me, and tell the anti-air to hold fire."
The Knight Scion obeyed, broadcasting the intercepted transmission into the data flow of Laurentius. The Magos opened up the compact data packet and translated it to audio.
"Must not attack. Overwhelming counter-assault is ready. Is anyone listening to this? I am Esed Wire of the Officio Assassinorum, agent of Lord Vangarich. My mission is sanctioned by inquisitorial representation. I must speak to the Lord Commander and Lord Primarch immediately. Do not attack the Citadel. For the love of the Emperor and mankind, do not attack."
Surrounded by chapter masters, the assassin was certainly not the most intimidating individual gathered in the bombed-out ruin of an Orc storehouse. The presence of Vulcan made his lack of size even more apparent. But assassins did not rely on physique alone. There was a tension in every movement of Esad Wire, an underlying energy about to be unleashed. Courland recognized it from his own brothers when preparing for battle, the storm beneath a calm sea. Esad Wire sat on a broken plinth, his black bodysuit slicked with blood. Most of it was the thick gore of the orcs, but some of the assassin's own leaked through a number of tears in the sin-skin suit. His shoulders were hunched with fatigue, a finger tapping on one knee with nervous energy. His eyes were hard as flint, pupils glittering with augment systems. Courland could also smell a trace of biomechanical oil and artificial sanguinary fluids, indicating internal bionics as well. No surprise, of course, given that all Officio Assassinorum personnel were physically boosted in some fashion. The hidden nature of Wire's augmentations meant that his role was clearly one of disguise and infiltration. His breath stank of stim residue, and an aura of antiseptic coagulant surrounded the assassin. As he shifted, a wound opened under his ribs, a fresh trickle of blood dribbling out onto his sinskin sheath. The assassin didn't seem to notice. His attention moved from one space marine to the next, and then on again, constantly scouring his surroundings and their occupants. Esad Wire had crash-landed the orc fighter almost on top of the Imperial lines, demanding audience for the commanders. Secured by Crimson Fists, he had said nothing until the representatives of the allied factions had arrived. The scene for the audience was grim. The broken stone underfoot was smeared with the blood of orcs, their corpses and body parts still wedged between chunks of rubble. The ceiling had collapsed, letting the mid-afternoon sun lay deep shadows across the proceedings.
"By what right were you sent into our forces?" demanded Odonathus. "Is that really the issue, Chapter Master?" the assassin replied. He grimaced and took in a ragged breath. "My orders came directly from Lord Vangarich, in concert with members of the Inquisition. Does it matter how or why? I tell you again, I have seen inside the Orc City. The force that remains is overwhelming, stronger than anything you've yet encountered. You cannot attack. Why did you not continue your mission to kill the great beast?" asked Vulcan. "Surely that was more important than warning us of any danger. If you killed the target, our losses become inconsequential." "I could not reach the great beast," Esad Wire admitted with a shake of the head. His eyes lost their focus for a few seconds, seeing something that was only memory. "I barely breached the outskirts of its sanctum. It was even more luck that I got out again. Tens of thousands of giant orcs, armed as well as your elite companies. But that is not the worst. There is more than simply a warlord guarding this force. It is something far grander. A demagogue. A high priest, perhaps."
"An emissary of an orc god?"
Beaumont spat the words, his fingers tight on the hilt of his sword.
"Folly! Do not attribute the trappings of civilization to their primitive antics." "I have seen their temples and preachers," the assassin replied sharply, his gaze still moving from one space marine to the next, never stopping. Courland noticed his defiant stare did not extend to Vulcan.
"I have witnessed the ceremonies, the rituals and sermons of their creed. This is holy war to the orcs, every bit as zealous as that ill-fated, ridiculous proletarian crusade." "That changes nothing," said Vulcan. "If anything, it reinforces the importance of the great beast. If we slay the orcs' demigod, we break them."
"I agree," said Wire. "But I tell you without a word of a lie that we cannot reach the monster this way."
"It's been baiting us the whole time," Thane suggested, "trying to draw us in at every turn. This last trap might be the final one."
"It's an orc. It wants to fight,"
Beaumont interjected.
"It is a smart orc, but do not give it more credit than that. It simply wants to fight on its own ground, its own terms."
"We cannot let it," said Courland.
"It offers us no option, Lord Commander."
Vulcan stood up as though about to leave.
"Must I say it yet again? You must have some faith, Courland. If there is a single lesson I need you to learn, it is that there is no final defeat while you hold true to the service of the Emperor. We cannot give in to despair, no matter what happens. Even when it seemed that Horus could not possibly lose, those of us loyal to the Emperor continued to fight. Even when there was not even a vision of what winning might look like, we refused. Vulcan bowed his head. His voice trailed away, shoulders hunched by some personal, painful memory. We cannot outbrute the orcs, snarled Esadwyr. He lifted his hands imploringly. It is why we have lost every battle so far. It is why we will lose everything if we do not think harder, rather than fight harder. Lord Vangorich sent me as his agent. Stop fighting a war, and start thinking like assassins. Beaumont growled something incoherent, and Vulcan shook his head in disgust. You have a suggestion, assassin? Asked Corland. If you cannot get to the target, bring the target to you. Draw it out, and then strike. The great beast has resisted all military challenge so far, said Vulcan, looking back at them. What could possibly draw it out of its fortress that we have not already done? I've seen inside the palace. The assassin spoke quietly and quickly. Ulanor cannot sustain itself. If you think we must fight time as much as the enemy, the orcs have it worse. They may have driven us from orbit, but not a single supply ship has landed in days. You see no sign of it here, but the warehouses, the great stores of the palace, are virtually empty. Not even fresh water. Their supplies are so low, the orcs are cannibalizing each other. They've eaten all of the human slaves and started on their own. I saw the remains. The weak link in the chain is the need for support from the tribute worlds and the surrounding systems. Ulanor's air and water are polluted. Its food resources scarce.
Blockade is not an option. We need a swift victory, too, said Corland. The Orc relief armies will be upon us in 3 days at most.
Then bring them to their knees in one, said Esadwyr. Find the remaining stores and break them, whatever the cost.
Vulcan returned, nodding. His demeanor had changed again, once more the resolute, proud warrior.
Yes, that would work. Draw out the great beast, and then we strike. With everything.
Corland knew that it really would not be so simple, and was sure that the Primarch was not naive either. But faith required a plan, no matter how hopeless. A scrape of metal on stone and the hiss of pneumatics drew everyone's attention to the Cult Mechanicus representative, Magos Laurentis. The bizarre-looking tech priest had listened to the exchanges without comment, but now stepped forward, limping slightly.
If I might make a suggestion, Commanders.